I want to acknowledge while this is loading, I'm fortunate to have my colleague, Dr. Gregory Hagen, in the audience there, also from Cambridge Health Alliance, and he's a pediatrician. I'm a child psychiatrist, and we our third colleague is Dr. Cook, some of you may know. He's actually going to be here tomorrow, who's a statistician and public health researcher. Our work has been focused in this past year on a grant that we got to try to analyze data in Massachusetts, specifically within the Cambridge Health Alliance system, trying to look at the composite of electronic medical record data and claims data and understand how we can increase pediatric mental health value in time for accountable care. Thank you. So I have no disclosures to disclose. As you mostly, I'm sure, know, there's increased pressure now on within the healthcare system to analyze how we're doing in terms of outcomes and what's understood as value, which is cost over quality. The studies of medical expense have been primarily focused on adults, as you may also know. There's little literature on kids' expense in general, and particularly kids' mental health expense. And part of that is because we historically thought of children as healthy, and we thought of them as cheap. But within pediatric service use, we're increasingly seeing what Greg refers to as the new morbidities, and others before him called new, which include mental health. So that a higher percentage of expenses within the pediatric population costs seem to be associated with mental health needs. At the same time, this data comes from the Surgeon General report and others. We've been aware for a decade or two now that we have a widespread prevalence of mental health diagnoses, mental health need across the pediatric population, and a very insufficient proportion of treatment available, treatment access. This untreated mental illness is expensive in its own right. It costs in terms of school achievement, suicide, adult impairment, crime, comorbid substance abuse, physical health burdens. We see obesity, diabetes, and asthma, the other three of the other important pediatric comorbidities, often concurrently present where there are mental health needs. But at the same time, in many systems, when you talk about increasing access, there's anxiety about increasing expense. So the dilemma that we are facing is how do we address this escalating need, the insufficient access, and somehow make it put a affordability bow on top. So we are in some ways hoping that global payments that many are concerned about but will actually be our friend, and that if we are being reimbursed in terms of overall outcomes, that doing a better job will actually matter in a way that will improve the likelihood of the right things that we're being paid for. So cost and quality now specifically components for what should be part of the global payment package. And for Medicaid, for example, where the majority of Medicaid insured are under 21, there's new motivation to look at pediatric expense. This is a slide that's actually from some work I'm doing on a different project. The Center for Healthcare Strategies has been looking, along with UCSD, Todd Gilmore's work, at Medicaid data across the country. This is from all 50 states. And what the correspondence is between physical health dollars and mental health diagnoses. So these figures are all connected to kids who have had at least one mental health claim. And for this particular slide, what we're looking at is the first column is everybody with any kind of a mental health claim, and you see the distribution of the average. That's the mean over the course of a year, those dollars across the country, $3,652 for physical health and $4,868 for mental health, and then the total health. And then you see the distribution. The next three columns give you the distribution. TANF is what we used to call it AFDC. It's kind of regular regular Medicaid. The foster care population, if you look at the proportion, you get a doubling of physical health dollars between the regular Medicaid and the foster care covered kids. And then our third category is SSI disabled kids. So if you just take that first row, I don't know if there's a pointer here, but you go across from the left to the right, you see how the dollars go up on the physical health side. Below that, you know, you see the same progression across on behavioral health and total health services. But one of our aspirations is to take a look at whether some of those physical health dollars, some of that physical health expense can be modified if we do a better job with our mental health services. And I have some sort of clinical experience with some other work I've done that suggests that that's a possibility. So we see physical health multiplied when dollars multiplied when there's mental health needs. We also are not on, I didn't show you on this slide, but you're aware from other sources, I'm sure, of the escalating PD psychopharm use across the country, which is not only alarming in terms of quality, but also brings cost. And so what we're trying to do is sort of transport the idea from Atul Gawande's hotspotters work that I'm sure some of you are aware of, which is on in terms of adult medical need, and take it to a pediatric mental health population. At the background, and Cambridge Health Alliance is also moving to become an accountable care organization. There's medical home efforts underway and some integrated mental health medical home activities, although nothing in terms of child mental health. We got a grant from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation in Massachusetts to take a look at this premise about whether what's driving pediatric mental health expense and whether it could be impacted by alterations in the care delivery process. And our first aim was to do a analysis of multi-year data looking at who these high-risk, high-expense kids. So I'm going to just zip along to show you. This is our population. We have 9,102 kids who have been continuously enrolled in the span of time that we're talking about. It's a five-year span. Of those, 7,608 have a claim. And one of the things that people may not be aware of, I know from other work I've done, it's always startling. You're taking a population that you know is impoverished and it has so many social risks, and quite a chunk of them have no expenses at all. So, you know, we would understand this as public health people, meaning they're getting no services at all. Our mean age is 8.5 years. 34% of those kids of the 9,000 had at least one mental health claim. So that's I don't know if anybody in here has managed care expertise, but they would call that's a penetration rate of 34%, which is actually much higher than, say, when private sector mental health statistics that you'll read about. It's probably about five times the rate, and we're looking at the top 10% of those kids because it's a sort of hot spotters argument is if you can get in there and understand the people that are really driving the biggest expense, you can make a bigger difference. It's a renaming of the Pareto principle for those of you that remember that. So here are our top 10%, and the first column is telling you the categories of services. We were interested in comparing service use across these different categories of kids. The first column after that is what the expenses are for kids with no mental health claim, because we wanted sort of a context, and we don't have it in the detail on the slide because you wouldn't be able to see it, but we looked at it also for pediatric inpatient, outpatient, pediatric pharmacy. But what we just rolled that up into, for this slide, it's 12-15 for those kids. And for the next group, you can see that medical expense category doubles, that to 21-39, or almost doubles. Then if you look at our third category, the top 10% kids, look at just at outpatient use of mental health services, compare those the $44 on ER versus $91 on ER, you see a variance of multifold expense driving those kids in the 10% to be the 10%, and their total expenditures are $11,777. And part of the really motivation to do this is because how many of you have tried to do things and been told that there was not enough money? This is a common refrain. One of the things that I say and have been saying reasonably successfully, I will share the secret with you, is that actually we're already spending the money. It's really how we spend the money that's what's up for discussion. So on these are two pie charts we're looking on the first one, total mental health expenditures, 69% of the dollars in the total mental health expenditures are being spent by those kids in the top 10%. So that's it's a total of $3.7 million. So it's the Pareto principle that this small percentage of the kids are really generating a huge percentage of the expense, and that's the justification for focusing in on those children. And then out of the total dollars, which includes physical and mental health, the top 10% of the kids, 3% of the population represent 23% of the total dollars. This is the distribution of diagnoses. They're kind of questionable, some of them. Greg's favorite is perinatal NOS, which he says, what the hell is that? But and these are taken from the medical record and from claims. So this is not a study where somebody's gone through and standardized how diagnoses are applied. On the other hand, these are what's out there. This is what people are getting. And you quickly see, in addition to perinatal NOS, you see that developmental delay is pretty frequently assigned. And I think one of our expectations is that where there are neurologic and other complicated presentations on the physical health side, that we are expecting to see more dollars. So I asked Ben Cook, who did this work for us, all these charts are Ben's, I should give him credit, to break it out for us by age, because one of the things that Greg and I saw, well, you can see all this perinatal NOS, whatever that is, you see these things, and you know that it's going to look different if we could break it into by age. So the 0 to 5-year-olds in our top 10%, these are all within the top 10%, they're kind of 50-50 mental health outpatient and non-mental health expense, with a little band of ER, mental health ER. As you go up the age range, then what you start to see is that the proportionality of the physical health dollars drops, and the mental health dollars begin to take over. In mental health inpatient is that kind of gold color under the blue, and that's look at the difference, and that goes up and up. So, and then we start to see a pharmacy getting fat. That's the red band. So the other thing for all of you early intervention, prevention fans is our argument is, well, if we could do a better job with that first bar, we might see more of an impact on those subsequent bars. This is our sample, which is actually kind of similar to what I showed you before, so I'm going to just keep going. So our second aim, the first aim was just to do what you saw, which is to take a look at, just from looking at the data, who are these kids, what are their patterns of care, where does the expense fall, what are the opportunities. The second aim is to do something about it. So we have a paired consultation model, which is as cheap as I could come up with to pull together the things that I've seen be successful in the past. And they involves child psychiatry availability to a pediatric practice, which is pretty radical from where we are. The access is so limited that's already remarkable. But with a family support specialist who's got a personal experience, she's a mother, a grandmother, has years of working with other parents and of kids with special needs. So, and what we're just working on, we're just starting our second year when the second aim applies, is invading the pediatric meeting structure, just being there sort of that's a step over us, so that whether invited, and we're kind of invited, Greg, right? We're sort of invited, but we're very present, and we aren't waiting for them to ask us questions necessarily. We're sometimes saying, wait, but what about this? And there's an active cultural, cross-cultural exchange where the child psychiatry, we've got trainees in there too. The child psychiatry fellows, the pediatric residents are learning from each other. The family support person is, we only have one because we can only afford one, is everywhere trying to sort of represent family voice. And what we're looking for is, are we going to be able to, Greg, could you hand those out? This thing that you can't read tells what's the process within the clinic. It's a double-sided page. You have to turn it over. It took a lot of work to set up what was the handoff structure? When were people going to do what? And that's a whole team-building exercise, as those of you savvy people know. We needed the answers, but we also needed the process. The third aim is going to be taking a look at what's the feasibility of this model, this intervention model that I just jumped over in the interest of time, and do we see any impact on service use? And we're already beginning to, if we have time for questions, Greg can give you wonderful anecdotes. We're already seeing some experientially some differences that this availability of resources is making. And the resources that I should clarify are to the provider. So it's really meant to be maximally financially feasible, not pouring resources into families, which, of course, I would love to do, but nobody's giving me those resources. So there's some interest now from the Department of Health and Human Services and others about creating some kind of extension of this project once we get some results, into something of a social lab of really looking whether if you restructure care delivery and you build in the family support, do we see a shift in those hot spotters? And looking at across other treatment populations to see whether we can begin to shift the cost curve. So here are my references and contact, and thank you very much.